Hello there, and welcome to another episode of From A to Z, a podcast with no bars, no bullshit, no PC. What the hell? When the hell? Today we're going to look into Black Sabbath. Their 50th anniversary just passed on February 13th with the release of the album Black Sabbath by Black Sabbath. A very popular song called Black Sabbath. We talk about the entire album. Behind me here, you're hearing myself actually playing the first riff from the song Black Sabbath. I haven't touched a guitar in about a year and a half or so. So I kind of just plugged in, tuned a little bit as best I could, and let it rip. Hope you guys enjoyed this podcast. Please leave a like, subscribe, and I'd love to hear your feedback too. If you'd like to hear more of this kind of stuff, hopefully we're getting a little better here as time goes on. Without anything else to say, let's go rock on. Enjoy the birth of metal. So something I learned last week was on Friday the 13th in 1970, metal was born. Black Sabbath released their album Black Sabbath. It was number 8 on the UK charts. And Black Sabbath was formed by Tony Iommi and Bill Ward from a band called Mythology, and Geezer Butler and Ozzy Osbourne from a band called Rare Breed. They formed in 1968 to the Polka Talk Blues Band, who later changed the name to Earth. And this is something interesting I learned doing some research, is that I never realized that Tony Iommi left the band. He went to go play with Jethro Tull, didn't work, came back later that year, and horror film by the name of Black Sabbath was playing across the street at a cinema, and that's where the name of the band came from.
Yeah, 1935 film, Boris Karloff, right?
You know what it's about?
No, I just know that's where they got the name.
The song itself, Black Sabbath, was inspired, written by Geezer Butler and Ozzy Osbourne, inspired by the horror adventure writer, as well as a vision that Geezer Butler claims he had of a black figure standing by the end of his bed. August of 1969 is when Black Sabbath officially became the name of the band. See here, their first show they did was in August 30th of 69, and they signed to Philips Records in November of 69, producing their first single, Evil Woman, which is a cover song by Crow, which I didn't know that was a cover song. I've listened to that song I don't know how many times now, and I didn't know it was a cover.
I didn't know that either.
Yeah. Yeah. It's funny, too. I'll get into this more later on about Evil Woman, because that song was on the UK version, not the US version. But I'll get into a story about that later. Basically, the band recorded the album Black Sabbath in 2 days. The first day was basically a 12-hour jam session, and the second day was just the editor or the engineer, and Tony and Ozzy did a couple extra lines and a couple tweaks here and there. That was really minor adjustments. I think they had to blend another guitar sound in for NIB and something else. Black Sabbath released the album, again, on February 13th in 1970. It was number 8 in the UK album charts. It released here in the United States on June 1st of 1970 and reached number 23 on the Billboard charts. It was perceived as just like Cream but worse by Rolling Stone, the worst of the counterculture. Drug-impaired reaction time was also some quotes I got from reception of the band and the album coming out. I remember seeing a documentary a while ago about the band, and the documentary how, you know, the song Black Sabbath is basically a spoken word for a poem, and just people were just like, this isn't music, and just blew their minds away.
I know that. I didn't like it the first time I heard it.
No,
the first playthrough of the album, that was my least favorite song.
I can see that.
Like, not until the end when the tempo kicks up, like the 4:35 mark.
Right.
But right. After a couple playthroughs, like I liked it more.
It grows on you, huh? The tritone gets to you, huh?
That's just, yeah, you know, they call it like doom rock or doom metal. And it was just, I don't know, it didn't speak to me at first.
You didn't sell your soul yet. That's a problem. I'm not into all the 40,000 genres of rock and roll, metal, like doom metal, hair metal, all that kind of stuff. Dude, whatever, dude. Like, to me, there's blues, there's rock and roll, there's metal, there's heavy metal. Like, you're in one of those categories, you know? I'm sure there's a couple other ones, but I'm not going to go into, like,
I never go into other bands and go into like the what subcategory fit in with three other bands.
It had been classified as like a doom metal song, which, you know, like evokes a sense of dread, impending doom, like suicidal thoughts. And you can see that after reading that when you go back and listen to it.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, you can see that for sure, man. I don't know if you did any research at all on Tony Iommi, but he actually, he's a left-handed guitar player.
Right.
He cut the two tips of his fingers off in a sheet metal accident. I believe it's his middle finger and his ring finger.
Yes.
On his right hand. That's what it is?
Yeah, and I think when he was at the hospital, he had asked them if there was some kind of tip they could make for him to put on the fingers, and they told him it was impossible. So when he got home, he went and MacGyvered it himself and made his own tips to put on his fingers.
And that's the reason why he plays the guitar down either a half step or a whole step to make the strings a little easier to bend. And that's part of that, where that dark sound comes from.
I also saw, too, that he had someone make him, like, special strings that were a lighter gauge than what was available at the time to make them easier to bend.
Really?
Like, you know, nowadays, and even, you know, a couple years after that original album, lighter gauge strings were available everywhere. But back when it first came out, they weren't. So he had someone make him, like, special light gauge strings that were easier to bend.
So what was around there? Like, was medium gauge the standard, basically?
Yeah, medium to heavy. So bending wasn't really too much of a thing. So he had like custom made ones to make it easier to do that.
Oh, interesting. Did not know that. Yeah, let's go through the album, man. So I'm gonna go through the album as it was for the UK version that got dropped. Okay. So the first song on the album is Black Sabbath. You said you really didn't care for it your first time. What made you start liking it afterwards again?
I don't know. I guess it's just the first time it's just really slow. And like you said, it's almost kind of like spoken word and stuff. And it took a couple times just to appreciate overall the composition of it, you know?
No, you've heard Black Sabbath songs before, right?
Yeah.
Yeah. So, you know, I'm sure you like War Pigs and Paranoid and Iron Man, that kind of stuff, right?
Yeah.
Was it like a surprise to you just hearing that song? Like, this is Sabbath? Like,
yeah, because it's like I said, it's much slower than what I'd heard before. I had never heard this song before the other day when I listened to the album for the first time.
Okay. That's crazy. Yeah, that's another thing, too. When I saw this, I was thinking to myself, too, like, man, I wish I was there to watch you listen to the album. I don't know why. It'd be weird, but it'd be interesting, too. So one of my favorite songs on I like a lot of songs on this album, dude. But The Wizard, the second song, quick, short, to the point. I love it's about Lord of the Rings and the Hobbits, about Gandalf. So what are the initial thoughts of you listening to The Wizard?
Well, I mean, I'd heard that song before.
Oh, really?
Yeah, they play that on Kilo probably like at least once a day.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
I haven't listened to radio in a while, so. It's about Gandalf, Lord of the Rings, The Hobbit. So that's what the basis was off of, which I thought was, you know, pretty cool. Nice little nerdy thing about that. Never talking, da 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 da, just keeps walking, da 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 da, spreading his magic, da 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 da. The next song is Behind the Wall of Sleep.
Yeah, I'd say The Wizard definitely wouldn't be as memorable of a song without the harmonica.
Oh, yeah.
That's what makes that song for me.
Behind the Wall of Sleep is the third song on the album. It is based off a short story called Beyond the Wall of Sleep. A short story was written back in 1919.
Like I said, the way the album I listened to, track three, is Wasp / Behind the Wall of Sleep / Basically / NIB. So they're all one track.
Oh, it all blends it all together.
Yeah. Which it sounds like, yeah. It sounds like that's the way they recorded it, which is why it's that way.
Correct. And another thing, too, like a lot of older albums, you listen to Pink Floyd, especially Pink Floyd's earlier stuff before Dark Side of the Moon, and a lot of other bands. There's a flow to the album. That's how all these albums are, because these guys pretty much did these sessions like in a couple days anyway. Not like nowadays, you know, shit, they record a record in, you know, what, 12 days, 2 months, if not more.
Right. You know, and sometimes they record it like one piece at a time. Like the band's not even together.
You know. Right. Right. Yeah. Yeah. You ever watch those videos of Metallica recording their albums?
No, I haven't.
They're always together sometimes, but like shit, they take forever to record albums. My God. And this is a prime time of music and rock and roll, dude. During the late 60s, early 70s, you had so many bands were producing so much music because they had to be on top of the charts. They kept producing. It was just so much music being created. I mean, there might be more music being created today now the fact that you have things like the internet, iTunes to produce the music. But I just feel like back then it was just bigger bands and just better quality, I thought. You know? You think of this time, you have the Who, the Stones, the Beatles were still playing. Like, Zeppelin's about the form.
I don't know. I did see an interview with Tommy Iommi where he's like listening to it back years later. He wishes they could have recorded it with better equipment and stuff.
Yeah.
But that's one of the reasons like it's so iconic, and the way it is what they had to record when they did it.
The sound. Yeah. Yeah. Cause Marshall is like heard this come out and they're like, oh, we gotta make better amps. We make amps that are louder. Go to 11. So, Spinal Tap reference. Anyway, you've seen Spinal Tap, right?
No.
What?
I know that was a Spinal Tap reference, but I've never seen that.
Oh, man. It's a good waste of your 2 hours of your life. That's a real. If you're going to blow 2 hours of your life to a movie, it's funny. That's funny. How'd he die? Choked on vomit. It wasn't his vomit, it was someone else's. anyway. NIB. People think that it stands for Nativity in Black, and it does not.
From what I saw, that name doesn't mean anything.
Correct. It was actually based off Bill Ward, the drummer, his goatee. They call it
Nib. Yeah, they call it Nib. So that name just, it doesn't mean anything.
Yeah, it wasn't until the South came to the United States when we basically Americanized it. Oh, NIB, it stands for something. Nativity in Black.
It was definitely my favorite song on the record.
Really?
Yeah.
What do you like about it?
I don't know. It's probably because it's probably the one I've heard the most.
Right.
I first heard it when it was released as a Black Sabbath DLC pack for Rock Band.
It's a song that's written in the point of view of Lucifer. He falls in love and is becoming a better person. Quite interesting perspective. Next on the album, depends on which album you listen to. So I believe you got Wicked World, right?
Yes.
Right. Was Evil Woman on there at all?
No.
Did you have listened to it separately?
Yes.
Okay. All right. So for me, the next song would be Evil Woman. Or Wicked World, depending which version of the album you're listening to. So while I was growing up listening to it, it was Wicked World as well, because my brother had the copy that was the English version. Or sorry, the American version. And Evil Woman came out on Black Sabbath's box set release in the early 2000s, I think it was.
Anyway, it's weird to me that the UK and US were different like that.
Yeah, I know. I think this is something that must have happened a lot more back then. I don't know if that happens anymore now. I don't know.
Not, definitely not now, because nowadays you release your album on the internet, so everyone gets it at once.
Yeah, that's true. So Evil Woman, did not know it was a cover by a band named Crow. Crow is actually a band out of Minneapolis. They formed in 1967, and the song Evil Woman hit number 19 on the Billboard charts. Now, when Black Sabbath did a cover of the song Evil Woman, it didn't hit shit. So basically, the story I understand from Evil Woman is that Tony Iommi claims that the band reluctantly agreed because the manager wouldn't do some commercial.
Hey, let's take a quick break.
That break is brought to you by At Adventure Gin. You can check her out on Instagram at Adventure Gin. All right, so we're talking about Evil Woman, and Wicked World. What stood out to you from these songs?
Well, for Wicked World, when I was reading an article, or it was the Wikipedia page for Black Sabbath, one of the genre titles was stoner rock, which I didn't think, I thought that was weird.
Okay.
Until I listened to that song, and I was like, okay, it makes sense now.
Why is that?
I don't know. I could picture, you know, ripping a big fat blunt and chilling out on the couch and rocking out and listening to that song, you know? That's just the vibe I got. That's what hit me.
Yeah, that's why I like it so much. I really like Wicked World, the lyrics to that song. The second verse, they have a goes through the a politician's job. A politician's job, they say, is very high, for he has to choose who's going to go and die. They could put a man on the moon quite easy, while people here on Earth are dying of old diseases. Like, I don't know, man. I like Sabbath. Like, to me, like, they have a lot of, like, timeless songs. And to me, it's another like, timeless kind of song for them, as it was back then during the Vietnam time. Kind of like in their next album on Paranoid War Pigs. I mean, that was so fitting, you know, for us growing up with the wars.
I did like the start of the song. It's kind of like this jazzy vibe, you know.
Oh, the da 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 da.
Yeah, it's kind of different than anything else on the album.
Yeah.
And then, you know, once you get around like 53 seconds, that's when it starts getting heavy and back to the normal stuff. But
yeah, it's catchy. It's definitely I thought it's very catchy personally, that riff. So if you had to choose between your album you got, the UK or US version, which one would you rather have? Wicked World or Evil Woman?
I don't know. I haven't listened to either of them enough to make that call.
I don't know which one I like either, man.
What I have written down for Evil Woman is a catchy main riff and a sick bass line. So I guess you can't go wrong with that.
Catchy main riff and a sick bass line. Nice. I'm trying to think of the song right now. Yeah, that is a nice bass line.
Yeah, I'd say it's kind of like, it's not like they wrote those as separate tracks. And so they were just kind of jamming out and just named it that way, you know?
And then I guess for you, be the last song on the album, right? Because Sleeping Village and Warning kind of blend together, right?
Yeah.
All I have written down for Sleeping Village is basically it's an introduction to Warning. Did you know that Warning is also another cover?
No.
Yeah, it's a cover by Anoli Dunbar's Retaliation, which I have not listened to the original yet. But I think the original, according to what I was researching, was 3 minutes long, and the version that Sabbath did was 10. And apparently, in the recording studio, they recorded this song for 48 minutes, dude. They just jammed for 48 minutes, and then the engineer had to cut it down to like how we edited our podcast, cut it down to the 10 minute version we got. So
I mean, I guess it's not surprising that there's a couple covers on here, because I'd say most bands, probably you start out playing covers of other songs that you enjoy or whatever, you know.
Yeah.
And you know, some bands, you know, they might not put them on their original album. Like I know like Disturbed, they put their covers out later that they originally started playing when they first formed. But it's, I mean, most bands do that when you first form a band, you play songs that you like from other bands at first.
And yeah, there's something to practice with, get the rhythm and the groove together.
And yeah, I think this album, I don't know if you saw, was, you know, that the Rolling Stone, the top 500 albums of all time they put out in 2012. Okay. So this was 243.
This one's 243?
Yes.
So after Rolling Stone calls it fucking garbage, and they come back out later and saying now it's 243.
Well, When did they call it garbage? Wasn't that,
when it first
came out. That was when it came out, right? Correct, yeah. So
yeah. Now the Rolling Stone calls it an album that eats hippies for breakfast. That was a quote I found somewhere online. I'm a huge Sabbath fan, dude, of the Ozzy Sabbath. I really haven't gotten much into the Dio Sabbath. Was Dio and Rainbow?
Yeah.
I know there's some good stuff there, but I was always into
to the Ozzy Sabbath. I don't think I really know any Dio Sabbath. Like, the Dio I know is Dio. As by himself, just as the band Dio.
I'm trying to think when Rainbow was. Whereas Rainbow was like a compilation of fucking just great artists.
Right, because isn't like the guitarist from Deep Purple?
Yeah.
And then Dio's the singer.
Yeah.
I guess the only real song I know is Man on the Silver Mountain. That's a great fucking tune.
Man on the Silver Mountain. Cut that out.
Oh, no, you got to lead off with that one.
What was that? Sorry.
I said, no, you got to lead off with that one.
Oh, yeah.
I mean, I'm really glad you pointed it out to me that now I've listened to it, and I'll definitely listen to it. I'll keep listening to it. I really enjoy it as a whole.
Have you listened?
And it's one of those things, like it was another interview with Tommy that he talked about, like, back then, you know, you wrote albums as an album. It wasn't about putting singles out. It was about the experience of listening to the whole album all the way through. And that's what's nice to do with this one.
Tony?
Yeah. Tommy.
Questions, comments, concerns? Send us a tweet at A to Z Prods. That's AtoZedProds. Let us know what you'd like to hear on the next podcast. That's at A to Z Prods.
No, that makes sense. I mean, I used to play in high school and college and whatnot, and we would play other songs from. Actually, the only song we played was Smelly Teen Spirit. Now that I think about it, it was the only song we all knew how to play.
Hey, yeah, that was the Me, Zeb, and Jeremiah. That was the first song we played, like from start to finish, all the way through.
Oh, really?
I think it was that in Detroit Rock City.
Oh
yeah, great memories of playing those songs out at Zeb's house in Callahan. Such a good time.
I remember it was myself, Eric, and Stacy were at Eric's place in his summer kitchen. And we had a drum set set up there, and we all just started playing Smells Like Teen Spirit randomly. And we rocked out on it, dude. It was awesome. It was a great time. And I don't think we played shit after that.